eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today on With the First Pick, we're opening up the old mailbag and we'll also hit some five-star reviews as nominated by you guys. I'm Ryan Wilson. That's Rick Spielman. This is episode 138. And Rick, before we get going, how many days until the 2024 NFL draft?
There are, can you believe it, almost less than a month, 31 days left until the 2024 NFL draft.
All right. Do you want me to ask you, or are you going to ask me who's your best, most famous number 31?
Was there a safety from Pittsburgh that wore 31?
There you go, Mr. Donnie Shell. I didn't check, and I'm bad. This is on me. Where did Donnie Shell go to college?
Alcorn State.
Is that right?
I don't know. I thought it was a small school.
He was a small school guy for sure. Let's see.
I think it's South Carolina State.
Oh, Debo.
South Carolina State.
There you go. Yep.
Orangeburg, South Carolina.
All right. There we go. Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah, I didn't have to look that one up.
South Carolina State. I got to confirm because people get angry when we mess those up.
Yep.
All right. By the way, I mentioned this last podcast. Steve-O's making a push here, Rick. We'd really appreciate it if you could take a second, hit the old like button, leave a comment, and subscribe to the show. Shows the bosses that folks like what we do, and it allows us to do things like hop in the old With the First Pick RV and hit another pro day tour. Which reminds me, Rick, after this show, you're packing up the old hitchhiking backpack. Going to thumb your way over to WTFP headquarters. I'm going to get in the RV, going to Baton Rouge. Then we're going to Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
I'm circling back. We'll be doing podcast from Baton Rouge for sure. We'll see about Chapel Hill, but we'll definitely recap the Drake May podcast. All this to say, please support the channel by hitting the
maybe up. We can upgrade over the Pinto we used last year.
Yeah, the Pinto, right? I don't even know if people know what Pintos are anymore. They were a fire hazard. That's all you need to know. But anyway, hit the like button, subscribe, leave a comment, do all those things. That would be greatly appreciated. And Rick, before we get going here, the old mailbag and some five-star reviews, I'll ask you quickly. Two most important things you want to see from LSU, one for LSU and one for UNC. What do you want to see?
I want to see them participate.
Oh, boy.
I hope Jaden Daniels steps on the scale. I'd like to get the verified weight, which shouldn't be an issue. I can't wait to see Neighbors run. Hopefully he runs, because I think if he runs fast, that he may be nipping at the heels of Marvin Harrison Jr., because Marvin Harrison Jr. elected not to do anything. So I'm anxious to see Jaden Daniels throw in person, and then we'll get a chance to compare him to the Drake May throwing in person the very next day. So love going to these pro days, because a lot of things that you can't verify on tape, you can definitely verify when you watch them in person. And unlike Pete Prisco, who doesn't get anything out of pro days, that's why he doesn't go to them. He would understand if he did go to a pro day, I would teach him to learn the game and learn about what you actually watch at pro days.
Yeah, last year we saw C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis back-to-back-to-back. So we got a sense. We knew who was going to have the biggest arm, but we got to see them throw within 48 hours of one another, and that helps.
That helped tremendously. And then we went the following week to watch our man Anthony Richardson down in Florida.
If he'd gone first, we probably would have canceled the rest of the Pro Day Tour because he was pretty impressive in person.
Yeah, they all were. But that's some of the flaws that we saw in Will Levis. We saw show up in some of the games this year that he played.
Yeah, and none of the flaws that we saw in Bryce showed up. He looked great his pro day.
Yeah.
So the other lesson, Brian Branch didn't run in his pro day after running the 4.58, and maybe that changes things. But again, we put too much.
But he looked very smooth in the drills.
Very smooth. Jahmyr Gibbs looked like he was from another planet in his little drills that he did. He didn't do everything, but he did enough.
And verified what we've seen on tape.
You get a sense. Paris Johnson Jr. on the plus. DeJuan Jones on the minus, who didn't work out.
Yep.
So it all matters, Rick. It all matters. All right. Let's get to some of these mailbag questions. And we'll do some five-star reviews after that.
I purposely did not open up Devo's email, so I'm anxious to see how hard these questions are going to be, because
right.
I know our listeners out there are very in tune to some very difficult questions, and actually I would say more difficult than the last time we did the mailbag than when I had to stand in front of the media and take questions from the media.
Look at that, Devo. He's buttering up our viewers and our listeners. Good thinking, Rick. That media class is paying off. All right, let's do it. At Werb24 asks, a lot of pressure, Werb24. Rick has set the stage pretty high here. Why do evaluators, primarily TV personalities, seem to discount or ignore the obvious and significant flaws in Caleb Williams' game? Fumbles, misreads, inaccuracy in the strike zone, and lack of anticipation are all over his tape, even in 2022. He doesn't have elite size or athletic ability, but people keep acting like he's Andrew Luck, which is laughable, giving Luck had every trait imaginable. I'll let you go first.
Wow, you're coming out the gate strong.
You're coming out hot.
Yeah. I do agree with some of the flaws in Caleb. I disagree. I think he's a great athlete. I think with his ability to move around in the pocket, I think the different angles and the way he torques his body to make some throws like he does reminded me some of the way Andrew Luck torqued his body and made some throws. Andrew Luck was not a perfect prospect either. When you go back, and I bet you look at the reports on him coming out in the draft, there were flaws there. I agree with Caleb Williams does have to have better ball security in the pocket. That was one of the issues that we talked about, is the fumbles in the pocket because he doesn't have two hands on the ball. And he's always looking for the big shots down the field because he was in shootouts. Now, I know teams will meet with him. They will talk through a lot of this. What was he thinking here? Why did he go here? Why did he go there? But he had a horrendous defense. The offensive line was porous, to say the least. So the only way that he probably felt, and I'm just assuming because we didn't talk to him about it on stage, is that he was trying to overcompensate for the flaws with the rest of the team. And the only way they had a chance to win a lot of these games was to get the shootout. And for him, to take the big shots down the field. Hence, he holds onto the ball too long in the pocket instead of taking what's given there. That stuff should be correctable with coaching. I think it'll be addressed a lot with these teams or a couple teams that he's meeting with to see where he's at. I know some of the sources in the background do not have an issue with him and him getting through his progressions. They think he's going to be a great pro when he starts running that type of system. And like I said, I've seen some unique Aaron Rodgers type throws with how he can be off balance and still be accurate. And the arm talent is undeniable when you watch it on tape.
And he's told us that Aaron Rodgers was sort of who he patterned his game after, not the obvious Patrick Mahomes, which he always went to. So I'll go through this quickly. Werb24 says fumbles. Yeah. Holding on to the ball too long, I think, trying to make things happen. Those things happen. Misreads. I will say I did make a note that sometimes he passes up the easy read on like a shallow in front of him to try to make a big play down the field. I think those things, as you know, you can correct those things. It's probably easier to do that than the opposite, right? If a guy just kept checking the ball down and you'd like him to push the ball down the field, that's a little tougher to coach him up in. in accuracy in the strike zone. I don't know. I think he's pretty accurate to all three levels, so I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, no, I think he's a very accurate thrower, whether he sets his feet or not. A couple of times he'll force throws, which may not look accurate because he's throwing into coverage and, you know, go back to the Notre Dame game.
Much those are all three inaccurate throws in the first half.
Yeah, those were poor throws. But if you look at the grand picture overall, he is much more accurate than inaccurate as a thrower.
And lack of anticipation, I thought he threw with a good amount of anticipation. I didn't have any issue with the anticipation throws.
Yeah, no, we're going to talk about one of the five-star reviews, and some of the throws he made to this young lad in the slot was very impressive on accuracy. And you see him get the ball out of his hands on time on occasion, and how he throws to the open area. So the receiver, he's not thrown to the receiver. He's thrown to the area at times, which you're going to have to do in the NFL. And you see those receivers, giving the receivers a chance to make plays. But I think it's unfair to say that he is not an accurate thrower, or he's not a good athlete, or
the elite size. That's a fair point. I get it.
Yeah, but how many of these quarterbacks are 6'4" and pocket passers anymore? There's
no. I get it. I get it. When you look at my
guys coming out, are different than they were 5 or 6 years ago.
When you look at my favorite website, mockdraftable.com, and just compares measurables, Caleb came in at 6'1" and an eighth, 214 at the combine. And the closest measurables are Chase Daniel, who was undrafted. He was 6 feet. Tim Hasselbeck, Sean King from back in the day with Tulane, Malik Willis, Cade McCown, Bailey Zappi. So those are a little different.
But those aren't the same athlete.
Not the same athlete. Malik is probably a better athlete, but not the football player. Do you remember Andrew Luck's size coming out?
6'3", maybe?
6'4", 234.
Yeah, he was.
I don't remember him being that big.
Yeah.
He ran a 4.67, had a 36-inch vertical.
Yeah, he was a freak athlete.
He was special. His comps are Josh Allen, physically speaking. Josh Allen, Blaine Gabbert, Cam Newton, Justin Herbert. So, right, the quarterback's size and shape has changed a little bit in the last few years. All right, Edward 24, thank you for the question. Came out hot on that one.
Yep.
All right, next up at MV12267. How far back will Caleb Williams set the Bears back when he becomes a bust? I didn't read the question. I read the question in real time. So that's one of those things where I didn't see that coming. Well, if he's a bust, it's going to set the Bears back a long way.
Yeah, no, because if they take him the number one overall pick, they traded away Justin Fields. If they don't get this right, then it's going to set them back for at least 5 or 6 years. Because
all right, let me turn the tables on you then. Are the Carolina Panthers set back 5 or 6 years because they didn't take C.J. Stroud?
No. It's year one. And like I said, we've talked about that, and I've talked to some people about that were in the building and said that they gave him too much. So it's how you handle these guys coming out. But if Caleb Williams is a bust, which I don't think he will be, then it'll be probably 5 or 6 years before they'll be able to recover from this type of bust, especially when you have the number one overall pick.
It is curious, and I wonder if this is a college thing in terms of college fandom, or if this is you're a fan of another team that's not Chicago, and historically Chicago hasn't been very good. But I do wonder why people think Caleb's going to fail, because I don't know what. I get the hype around the player sometimes. That's not the player's fault, but it is sort of strange sometimes that people are convinced that a player is going to fail based on the same things everyone's watching. And it looks like he's probably going to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, that's what and it's still a subjective decision. Everybody's subjective. So, but the number one overall pick, I don't think anyone's arguing he shouldn't be the number one overall pick right now. Now, maybe that changes. I doubt that after we get through our little tour this week coming up. But if he is a bust, which you're not going to know for 3 years anyway, before you can, you know, say that he is a bust.
Steelers knew in 2 years with Kenny Pickett, just saying.
Well.
Sorry, Deepa. Yeah.
But was it him, or was it, you know, did they handle him the right way with Matt?
No, Kansas they didn't. Offense?
So.
Yeah. I want to ask about like a couple previous number one overall pick quarterbacks. You can decide if you want to label them a bust or not, but if they set their organizations back, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, no. 2019, Kyler Murray.
No, I don't think so. What do you think, Rick?
I wouldn't say that yet, because they got to the playoffs with him. And they're sticking with him now. But when they got to the playoffs, his issue was he performed poorly once they got into the playoffs, but he got him to the playoffs.
And again, is
2018 Baker?
Well, yeah, you have to say, because he's not with Cleveland anymore. He was a bust in Cleveland.
I don't think Cleveland helped him out, though.
But he was a bust. He got into the playoffs once. They won a playoff game. But
you know what I'm hearing here, Debo? Rick's tight with Kevin, so he doesn't want to throw Kevin under the bus. I thought it was a marriage that wasn't going to work out that last year.
I said it was a bust because he's not there anymore.
And it took 5 years. You know, they made that one playoff appearance, then 5 years with a journeyman quarterback to get back to the playoffs. 2016, Jared Goff didn't totally work out, but they won a Super Bowl within 5 years.
Yeah, they got to the Super Bowl and lost, and then they won a couple years later with Matthew Stafford.
But how can you say Jared Goff is a bust for what he's doing in Detroit right now? Because I don't think Detroit would be where they are at right now without Jared Goff.
I agree with that. I don't think he was a bust in L.A. He was drafted by Jeff Fisher, and then Jeff Fisher got fired. Sean McVay came in, and I thought he was still growing. And that's the other thing. Quarterbacks aren't who they're supposed to be in day one of their NFL career, and people get impatient with that. Now, was he the best quarterback for – no, Matthew Stafford's better than Jared Goff in L.A., but I think you could argue that the trade has – one of the few trades that's worked out for both sides pretty clearly.
Right.
These guys as number one picks, rank them in terms of just how successful they've been as number one overall picks. Goff, Baker, Kyler.
Goff, Kyler, Baker.
Yeah, with the teams they started with. I think that's right.
I'm not even saying the teams they started with, just their careers to this point in time.
Oh, okay. So, Rick, if you're starting a team tomorrow, which guy are you rolling with?
Goff, Kyler, Baker.
Why are you taking Kyler over Baker?
Because Baker he had a great year last year, but let's see if he can replicate that.
Rick is such a one-year wonder guy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
The last one I'll throw out is 2015 Jameis. You know, again, a team that won a Super Bowl when they got rid of their number one overall pick, but they didn't make the playoffs during Jameis's tenure.
Yeah, I think Jameis underachieved.
Yeah, he was a bust.
I don't know if I call him a bust, but I was hoping.
When is he done? Has he ever had a winning record?
I don't think so. He had a good year with Sean, and then he tore his ACL, the one after he got to New Orleans.
But that was like for 4 or 5 games.
Yeah. I mean, if he'd been a second round pick, you'd be like, okay, that's great. But if you're the first overall pick, you expect a little more. All right. Fair enough.
Threw for 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions in one season. That's pretty sick.
Yeah. Not everyone can do that, Rick. All right. Next up. Yeah. Basically a lot of pressure to be the number one overall pick. I think there's a lesson there. Cameron Rubio, 3959, asked Rick, Michael Penix Jr. was led by incredible staffing and an equally impressive collection of offensive weapons. Without the staff and the team, will he be able to compete at the same level in the NFL? That's a fair question, because a lot of times these players go from good teams to super terrible teams in the NFL, and the results don't match what they had in college.
Yeah, but these staffing now at the NFL level, they have 20-plus coaches on their coaching staff now with all the quality controls and the assistants to the assistant coaches. So I think the staffs have definitely increased over the last 10 years. I had Pete Bursich, who is the play-by-play with Paul Allen for the Minnesota Vikings. He was down here on spring break, and we went to dinner with him the other night. And he said when he was coaching up in Minnesota, I think their staff was 9. Now, every coaching staff, I would imagine, is 20-plus. So there's more than enough there, just like the colleges. The colleges are different because they have 8,000 analysts also on there. But their player personnel departments, they all have tech, like de facto GMs now because of the transfer portal and everything that's going on 24/7, 12 months a year in the college, which is totally bizarro land and ruining college football, in my opinion. But that's a whole nother discussion.
You're burning your bridges for an opportunity to get a GM job in college. I'd quiet down for you.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'll be okay.
I think Cameron's asking this question. Kellen DeBoer was great at his job. You have a bunch of first and second and third round receivers. You're going to have a lot of guys getting drafted on the offensive line. Carolina had the Panthers had a staff full of quote unquote great coaches. It didn't work out last year for a number of reasons for Bryce. So when you go to a bad football team if he's a top 15 pick, for example, how does that transition work for a guy who's accustomed to having success in college?
Yeah, I think that, you know, see, like if he ended up with the Raiders, let's say, for example, okay, they still have Devontae Adams, which I think would be a better player than what he was throwing to in college. At least, you know, you're projecting Adunze, but I don't know if he'll be Devontae Adams, you know.
Okay.
For whatever reason, you know, Renfro wasn't what he was a couple years ago, whether how they used him or not. Then they signed a receiver from New England.
That was Jacoby Myers and Trey Tucker, who we talked a lot about last year as a rookie.
Yeah. So I think it's just the parity. And I think the biggest adjustment for the quarterbacks is the defense and the defenses that they're facing and how good is that offensive line. So if they're struggling up front, then what are the coaches doing to try to hide that weakness to give the young quarterback the best chance to hopefully have success? So,
well, I don't want to scare you, Rick, but as I'm looking at their roster here, their current starting right guard is DJ Fluker.
Yeah, that's not good.
They got to figure some things out.
Yeah, but that's just an example if he ended up there. Now,
No, I was just curious as I was looking that up. But the transition usually isn't easy. And I think more obviously the personnel around you is important. But as you note, the defense and getting up to speed with the speed of the defense and the complexity of the defense is what determines how quickly you assimilate, it seems like.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the critical part of this. And you've seen C.J. Stroud get better towards the end of the year and the way he played. We didn't see that in Bryce. But I think it is, like I said, the biggest thing to me, whether I'm right or wrong, is that you have to get familiar with the system. And the one thing of Michael Penix Jr., and we saw it in the national championship game against Michigan, when they were coming after him, did he have the answers to where to go with the ball when it was hot? Or a lot of times a quarterback, if they have a scat protection or some kind of five-man protection up front, if one guy is coming free, he has to have the answer to that hot.
Yep.
And it didn't look like he did in that game. So those are things that you learn, but you learn them over time. And you learn them when you're in the same system, but when you change systems all the time, you don't know where all the answers to the test are when certain things break down.
Right. Incidentally, the Debo's Philadelphia Eagles had very little answers for Hotz either, which is a weird, wild thing last year that didn't make any sense. That'll change with their new offensive coordinator, Debo. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. All right. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to continue.
And that will be whatchamacallit's third offensive coordinator in 3 years.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts, Shane Steichen, Brian Johnson, and Kellen Moore.
Yep.
Kellen Moore might end up being, we'll see. If he's as good as Shane Steichen, that's a home run. But I think Debo's happy that the previous staff has been turned over. All right, when we come back, we'll talk more about these mailbag questions, including a question about New England and wide receivers, and Rome Odunze right after this. Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBSSports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBSSports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half.
Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, Rick, we're rolling on. At GrayDense582 asks, would New England fare better with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Michael Penix Jr.? Get the juniors on the squad together, or Drake May or Jaden Daniels, and an early second-round receiver like a Troy Franklin, for example, or maybe A.D. Mitchell if he's there. What makes the most sense in your mind?
Take the quarterback first, because I think there's a drop-off between the top three and Michael Penix Jr. And the receivers, there's a pretty good history of receivers having success that aren't taken that high. Late in the first round, second round, third round, there's plenty of talent. And this is one of the most talented receiver classes that I've seen in a long time. So I would say make sure you got the quarterback secured first, and then pick up the receiver and the weapons behind him.
And by the way, A.D. Mitchell could be a realistic second round possibility because they picked 34.
Yep.
So even if you trade up two or three spots,
they're going to get a really good receiver. Yeah. There's a lot more receivers that are going to be really good players in this league than there are quarterbacks.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think you take the quarterback that you love, and then the receivers. The other thing about Michael, Marvin Harrison Jr., excuse me, whether he's the first wide receiver or not, and you mentioned this, that you read this somewhere, that he had spoken to Arizona. So he's going to be the first wide receiver taken of Arizona. It was fine with him not working out at his pro day.
Unless Arizona trades out.
In which case, if you trade up for Malik Nabers, Godspeed. I love Malik Nabers, but if you're trading up for giving up the farm, hopefully it's probably for
you're trading up for a quarterback.
Right. That's my point. So Marvin still could go first. All right. Next up, Sean Emmons, 6436. Why is Roma Dunze not projected to go earlier? The man could genuinely be a franchise cornerstone wide receiver before we know it. And you could very much be right. Justin Jefferson went pick 20. When did Justin Jefferson get drafted?
I can't remember if we were 22, 23.
Yeah. Fifth wide receiver off the board after somebody that the Eagles drafted. We got to quit bringing up because Tebow gets depressed. You just don't know, right?
Yeah. No, I think he's going to be a really good pro. And but Marvin Harrison Jr. is unique because of everything we've talked about him. And I think Malik Nabers' speed and his ability with the ball in his hands after the catch is pretty unique. And then I think Odunze is maybe not as explosive of an athlete, although he's going to be a really good receiver than Nabers is. And I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is smoother than Odunze is, but I think Odunze is going to be, has potential to be a really, really good receiver as well.
Who's more explosive, Odunze or Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I think Marvin Harrison Jr.
Okay, I think it's close. But again, we talk about this with the offensive tackles, with the cornerbacks, with the edge rushers, the wide receivers. They're all lumped together. You could draw a name out of a hat, and you're probably going to hit a home run.
Well,
based on their college production.
Off their college production, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think as people – and they're in their draft meetings now, and or they're at the league meetings now. But then when they come back for their April draft meetings, they'll finalize that board because you'll have the rest of the answers that you're looking for by the time these pro days are done and all the other ancillary tests and medicals that you do to start stacking these guys. But if they're all clean and everybody checks the boxes, I think all three of those guys will be home run picks. I think they'll all be very good pros.
I think I asked you this last week, but I can't remember the answer. So the first wide receiver off the board last year was 20th, Jackson Smith and Jigba. How many of these wide receivers are gone before pick 20?
I would say three for sure, maybe four.
Four, okay. Because sometimes they get pushed down because they're quote-unquote wide receivers and the class is so deep, yada, yada, yada. I think four.
Top three for sure.
Yeah, I think the top three are definitely top 15 prospects. You just don't know how the whatever's going to happen is going to happen in terms of the trade-ups and the run on certain positions. All right. You want to do a dollar bet on that?
That three go?
Before 20?
Yeah. I get three. I say three. And you say you're going to be four?
I'll say it'll be three. I say it won't be three. How about that?
You don't think three receivers will go in the top 20?
I don't. I'm just concerned that they run.
Give me the dollar now. Okay, Debo, write that down. Just as okay.
Is that a bad bet, Debo?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to take not three, go before.
That's your worst one.
That's your worst thing. Yeah.
Last year, the one
pick for Kansas City when people killed you for Graham Barton.
This is worse than that?
Oh, it's worse than that.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, 100 pennies coming your way, Rick. Okay. Look, man, if there's a run on cornerbacks, edge rushers, quarterbacks.
Are you saying that Dunze is going to fall out of the top 20 is what you're saying?
No, he's going to get drafted by the Steelers at 20, the top 19, before pick 20.
Okay, I'll double down and say that he's not there when the Steelers are there at 20.
Top 19, okay. All right, well, if that means me giving you a dollar for me to wish the Steelers and Adunze a happy marriage, then I'm willing to eat that dollar. All right. The lesson there, Sean Emmons, is that Roman Dunze is a really good, really, really, really good player. And outside of Jaden Daniels, I don't think there's anyone who's he's done a lot to help himself, I should say. I'm sure there's some other names. But in terms of 22 to 23, he was great. Now we get to the meat of the questions here. PMF DD3325 asks, could Spencer Rattler turn into a franchise-caliber quarterback if he can go to a team that helps him with the late-game decisions that make Rick so angry? So let's say he goes to San Francisco, and San Francisco moves on from Brock Purdy in 2 years because they don't want to pay him. Is that a good landing spot for him?
Anyone that's coming out of that system would be the best, whether it's the Rams, right. whether it's the 49ers. I would say even Minnesota.
Minnesota, Houston, if they want to cut C.J. Stroud and sign Spencer Rattler as an option.
Yeah, that, the dollar on that too. I mean, that may be a better bet than the last one you made.
All right, so here's the thing. If the Sean McVay / Kyle Shanahan coaching tree is a big part of the answer, why are other teams stubborn to go in that direction? Or is it just more difficult than just saying, all right, that's sign someone from that tree?
More difficult than that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I don't know if Brock Purdy would be Brock Purdy if he wasn't in San Francisco.
Yeah. And that's no disrespect to Brock Purdy, but put him on the Steelers, for example, with Matt Canada dialing up plays, and he probably wishes he was in Philadelphia as well. Right. Yeah.
No, they have to be in the right system and the right fit and the right coaching. And if Spencer does get in that right area, then I think he has a chance. It's just got to, because there's no question about the throwing and everything like that. It's just if he's not in the right situation, he's going to fail.
Yeah. And it sounds obvious, but I mean, we see it every single year. It happens.
Yep.
All right. I think I've asked you this before too, but if Mac Jones had gotten drafted third overall instead of Trey Lance, he's probably doing a little better in San Francisco than he did in New England.
Maybe. That's
Jesus. Can you imagine if he was just as bad?
Yeah, that would be bad.
He would have to be better. He feels like not the perfect new school version of what Shanahan is looking for, but sort of the Kirk Cousins mold of what Shanahan loved about Kirk Cousins in Atlanta or in Washington, excuse me.
Yep.
Yeah. Not Matt Ryan, but close to Kirk Cousins. Although, as you know, Kirk Cousins is a pretty good athlete. We don't give him enough credit. All right. Great news, Spencer. Rick is on board, finally. At Ian Newberry asks, I have a question about Tez Walker. Before the Senior Bowl, I was seeing him as a top 6 to 8 wide receiver. I know he struggled with the drops at the Senior Bowl, but the combine was really good. He tested out through the roof of the combine. I'm now seeing him in the wide receiver 13 to 18 range. Have we swung too far with him? I'm assuming swung too far in the other direction, that he may get drafted too low. So where the Senior Bowl was, there were a few tougher Senior Bowls that I've seen in recent years, about just in terms of the mental, trying to overcome those mental drops. I'm assuming they're mental. I'm trying to look where I have them. What was your take on sort of the fluctuations between January and now about where Tez Walker is?
I don't think it's that deep of a swing. I still think he'll be a Friday guy. I think the biggest thing with him, there's no question about the athleticism. There's no question about his ability to take the top off of coverage with his speed. I think the route refinement needs a lot of work. I think just the nuances of the game and learning the game is going to take time. But the Senior Bowl was a bad impression. He did catch the ball better, I would give him, at the combine.
Could he have caught it worse?
Huh?
Could he have caught it worse at the combine?
No, yeah. But he extended. He made some nice catches at the combine. I think I'm anxious to see him catch the ball, and I'm anxious to see him run routes in person on Thursday at North Carolina's Pro Day. So that I think you're taking him 13 to 18. I still think he may be one of the top 10 receivers off the board.
6'1.5", 193, 4.36 of the combine, and then the 40.5-inch vertical is all mind-numbing because that's some true athleticism. I have him. I talked to a team that has a mid-day three. I have him right now in the fourth round. I'm going to name some players, and if you've seen them, you can tell me whether you would take Tez Walker or this player as a wide receiver. Jermaine Burton. You're taking Jermaine Burton, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Ricky Pearsall.
Yes.
Roman Wilson.
Yes.
Javon Baker.
No, I'm taking Tez.
Okay. Jaquan Jackson, the smallest slot guy to Tulane.
I'm taking Tez.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Now, I've seen this. I haven't confirmed it, so take this with a grain of salt. Marcus Rosemey-Jackson, who we both like, I saw he ran a 4.86 at his pro day. I'll double check, but if that number holds, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. He's a free agent then.
Okay. Have you seen Bub Means yet out of Pitt? We talked about him.
No.
Okay. Jacob Cowan, the slot guy to Arizona?
Yeah, but those guys are, I think, three third down guys. Little slots.
Yeah. Are they in the same bucket when you're doing your tiers?
No, I think Tez is an outside guy.
Okay. All right. Here's a good one. Brendan Rice, USC.
Brendan Rice probably is not as explosive as an athlete or as gifted with the ball in his hands after the catch. So I would go, I think Tez has more upside.
Okay. And one last name I'll mention, Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker. You need some Johnny Walker. Johnny Wilson. You need Johnny Walker when you watch Johnny Wilson.
I'm taking Tez because he's more explosive of an athlete.
Yeah, I agree. And there's been some conversation about putting some weight on Johnny Wilson and maybe making him like a Juwan Johnson type. We'll see how that plays out. All right. And to your point, we'll see Tez in a couple of days, and I'm sure if he runs, he's going to run fast, and I think we'll be more interested in watching him run the routes. All right. At Jeff Bornioli. I think it's how you pronounce it, Jeff. If not, my apologies. Who benefits more from a trade with Minnesota, Arizona or the Chargers? So the Chargers are at 5, Arizona is at 4, Minnesota's at 11 and 23. So Arizona, we did this as our sort of mock draft for CBS Sports Network with the BMAC. If Arizona trades with Minnesota, they're going to have 3 first round picks. And Los Angeles, who is now in their new offense with Jim Harbaugh and who's the offensive coordinator that used to be with the Ravens?
He's Roman.
Yeah.
Greg Roman.
Greg Roman's there now. So it's going to be a run-heavy situation, and they'll have pick 5, pick 11, and pick 23 as well. So we'll have 3 first-round picks as well. Whoever trades is going to have 3 first-round picks is my point. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say either of them because Chargers have, I can't even name a receiver besides Quentin Johnson on their roster.
They have Josh Palmer.
And Josh Palmer.
And Darius Davis, who's the slot return guy, who's pretty
He's
small.
He's more of a gadget guy.
Yeah. And that's it. Simi Fehoko, who was drafted by the Cowboys. He's out of Stanford. And that's right. It.
So
and 4 receivers on the roster.
Yeah. And then Arizona can fill a lot of defensive needs and get also another receiver that can stretch the field because Hollywood Brown is in Kansas City now. And they traded Rondale Moore.
Well, let me ask you this way.
Atlanta.
Which team benefits from this trade the most in terms of being a playoff team next year?
Oh, then I would go with the Chargers because of the quarterback.
That division may not even be tougher. They're both pretty tough divisions.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, it's close. I think you're right. I think it is close. But these are the questions that you're having if you're those teams and if you're Minnesota trying to figure out how to get up there. I think the biggest burden is the Vikings, the risk. And you pointed about this. Whoever you're taking there, you're giving up probably 3 first-rounders and something for the same quarterback position that the other 3 teams are just going to trade give up a first-round pick for Caleb and Jaden and Drake, presumably. Ooh, all right. All right. Nikki CC20, fan from Scotland. No sticky wicket impressions this time, please. Thank you for that, Nikki. No idea what that is.
I learned it when I was over there. It was a little bit of sticky wicket, you know?
I love that. Our Nikki from Scotland has no idea what you're talking about. That's hysterical. He's a Commanders fan, though, hoping they take Leggett, Rice, or Troy Franklin, the wide receivers, but expecting an edge early round 2. Does taking the quarterback in round one change how you assess the rest of the draft, building around with protection and weapons for him, or do you focus on the overall team? That's a good question.
Yeah, no, I think they've done a really good job signing a lot of guys, that the new coaching staff is familiar with. You know, even Eckler coming in to team up with Robinson in the backfield, all the defensive guys that they were able to sign. I still think they have pretty good receivers. So I think that if they get their quarterback in place, they will lean, you know, towards the defense. They can still use offensive line help. So I don't think there will be, I think they go what follow the truly follow their draft board on best players and how they're ranked on their draft board and just continue to build. They try to fill a lot of holes in free agency, but I think they're in a position with all the people that they signed or all the players that they signed in free agency that they can, after they get their quarterback, they can just truly follow the board on how they have that board stacked.
They have done a really good job in free agency, at least on paper. They bolstered the interior offensive line. They got Tyler Biadasz and Nick Allegretti, guard and center. Zach Ertz adds some depth there. He's a little older, but he still adds depth. You mentioned Austin Eckler. Cleve Farrell, the former first-round pick, adds depth along the at the edge rush position after they traded away their two guys, Bobby Wagner. Frankie Louvu might be an underrated signing from Carolina. He's a really good player that was in a program that a lot of people weren't paying attention to. Jeremy Chinn as well. And then Michael Davis adds depth in the secondary. He's currently listed ahead of Emmanuel Forbes.
Don't forget about that. Is it Autry that they signed from Dallas? The pass rusher is an underrated pass rusher.
Dorrance Armstrong and Dante Fowler Jr.
Armstrong.
Okay, Dorrance Armstrong from Dallas. That's right.
So they filled a lot of holes with veteran players. So that gives them the freedom to follow their draft board just truly on how they have that draft board stacked.
And those trades at the trade deadline, they sent Montez Sweat and Chase Young out of town. They now have the second pick, the 36th pick, the 40th pick from Chicago, the 67th pick, and the 78th pick. So they'll
make some hay.
They're primed to turn this thing around. You got to get the quarterback right, as they always say, but they're in an enviable spot. Thank you for that, Nikki.
What do you want me to do? Ixte, nixte, Frankenstein. That's German.
Okay. Well, then our German fans can pipe up and say they don't know what you're talking about.
I've been seeing before at the Abend, yeah.
Somebody. Oh my gosh! I wish I could remember that someone made a joke that you look like some villain from a movie. I have to remember which one it is. You did like a movie villain. All right, Shaq Pack 51 asks: can scheme and culture ruin a player, or are they just destined to be a bust? Well, I mean, I don't want to. I think Brock Purdy's an example of right being in the right situation. I don't know if he'd been a he might have been a bust somewhere else, but I think that happens all the time, right?
Yeah, I think scheme and culture is definitely have to be a fit. For example, if there's, let's say, Trevante Sweat, who's a big, to me, two-down nose tackle that's going to fit really well in an odd front where he can play zero nose or over top the center. Now, if you put him in a Tampa scheme or a one-gap scheme getting upfield, then he's going to fail. So to me, it's a combination. Either you mis-evaluated the player, but more than likely, if you don't fit the player with the scheme or the coaches don't adjust the scheme to what the player does best, then that's where you end up having the bust.
Yeah, or like a Deebo Samuel, for example, if you just make him solely a deep threat, like that, you're not getting the most out of his abilities, Shanahan's the easy answer. Even Puka Nacua, misuse Puka Nacua, and he's probably not setting all these records, and we're not giving you a hard time about Puka. You would have been right.
Yeah, well, I wasn't. He was a fifth round pick. I didn't put him in the first round.
He should have been in the first round.
Okay.
Who are you angrier at? Who are you more angry at? Puka Nacua or Kobe Turner?
Kobe Turner they're both very good football players. Okay. Kobe Turner is a very good inline pass rusher. He gets smashed at the point versus the run, but he fits the scheme. And that's why both of those guys, and give credit to the Rams staff, Sean McVay, Raheem Morris, for finding out what these guys do best and putting them in the right scheme to put a highlight on their strengths, not their weaknesses.
All right.
In a redraft, would you take either of them top 50? Be honest.
No.
What do they have to do?
I got to see what else was in the top 50.
Great news if you're a Kobe Turner fan. Our buddy Lijay Doosable, who is the biggest Kobe Turner fan, will be joining us in a few weeks to talk defensive linemen, and we'll no doubt bring that up. So cut that, Debo. We'll make a note. And, Rick, hopefully you don't respond the same way you responded when Spencer Rattler called you out in person. You'll stand up for yourself this time.
I'm fine with myself.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll hit these five-star reviews right after this.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, Rick, let's hit some of these five-star reviews. I haven't talked about these players in a while. And if you're new to this, just leave a five-star review on Apple Podcasts of an FBS or FCS player who is draft eligible. If you get down the stretch now, we might have to start looking into the 2025 draft, but leave a player and we will review that player on an upcoming episode. So we got a couple names here we're going to get through here. Start with Jalen Ford, linebacker for the Longhorns. 6'2", 240, 33.5-inch vert. Didn't run his 40 at the combine. I don't think Texas, I haven't seen the pro day numbers. I don't think he ran his pro day either, but I'll check. Either way, he's sort of an old school linebacker in that he's a little thicker. I thought he had good athleticism. I thought he's a good tackler in space. Thought he worked well to get off blocks. Thought he could run with tight ends and running backs out of the backfield. Had the closing speed to get home quickly. I wrote my last line, intriguing player, good athlete, want to see more.
What do you want to see? You're not going to see any more.
I guess I got to go back and watch some more tape. Maybe that's a note to me.
Yeah. Well, if you had done your homework over the weekend like I did, you would have not wanted to see more.
All right. Did you see enough?
I seen enough.
All right. What do you think?
I like his size. I think he is non-physical, taking on blockers at the point. I don't think he has any thump to him. You watch the Alabama game, he got trolled a couple of times when thrown out of the bar, whatever you want to call it, when those guys got up onto him at the second level. I think he is a good enough athlete. He had the dropped interception in the red zone that tipped and got Alabama back in the game. You know, the one thing that for a guy that I don't think runs extremely well, I think he is instinctive in coverage. I've seen him carry some guys down the seam, tight ends down the seam. He had 6 interceptions for his career, which is really good. But I don't think he's very consistent finding the ball in line, especially when he's engaged. I think he needs to be more physical for his size. That's why I was maybe more disappointed in him than you.
Is that
a guy that big? I think he needs to come up and take on blocks better, and I think he needs to find the ball off blocks better. I don't think he's very instinctive once he gets engaged.
Interesting. Okay, I had him as an early day 3 guy. Is that too rich for you?
No, I think he'll be a Saturday guy.
Like middle 4th round? Does that sound right?
4th, 5th round.
Okay, maybe. All right. All right, we came to the same answer, just got there differently.
No, he doesn't take on blocks. Show me plays where he does take on blocks, and then I'll correct myself, but okay. I'm not.
All right, I'll show you that afterwards. Yeah. Houston game in particular. I didn't want to embarrass you like that. All right, let's talk about a guy that we were you alluded to earlier in the show, talking about Caleb Williams, Taj Washington. 5'9", almost 5'10", 174, 35-inch vert. I don't have a time on him, but I thought he showed some short area quickness in the quick game. He can make defenders miss near the line of scrimmage. Thought he had a he could catch the ball away from his body. He doesn't have a big catch radius because he's a smaller guy, but he can catch the ball away from his body. Thought he had an extra gear in the open field. Makes defenders miss in the open field. Sort of the slot receiver that you probably visualized. The comp for me, got your squeeze ball out, Jameson Crowder.
He's not as fast as Jameson Crowder.
Well, I don't know what this guy's time is.
Well, just watch the tape. His game speed's not very fast.
Oh, boy. He's thinking about that whooping he took in pickleball, Debo. He's having flashbacks. Focus, Rick. Focus.
I am. I focused all weekend on all these right. guys.
He's small a kick returner as well.
Receiver that has return value because of his quickness. He's quicker than fast. He competes. I thought he was really tough, especially coming inside. He's a very courageous guy that will take some shots and hang on to the ball. I think he can get separation because of his quickness into and out of his cuts. He's got a very small catching radius. He does catch the ball very well. I do question his speed for a small receiver to take the top off coverage. I didn't see him outrun many people in the open field. When he had space, I thought he got gunned down. I think he's going to struggle versus bigger corners at the next level, especially downfield, if he gets in any contested 50-50 balls. Now, coming inside, he'll put his – I mean, he is tough now, and he'll take a shot and go compete for the ball. But I don't see the speed to take the top off of coverage like a Tank Dell, and I don't see him winning a lot of 50-50 balls downfield, especially versus some of these physical corners.
Yeah, but you're not drafting him to do those things, am I right? When you draft a smaller guy in the slot, you want him to win short and intermediate, right?
Yeah, but how high are you taking him?
Oh, I have him going like a mid to late fifth.
Yeah, yeah, he's a day three guy.
Yeah, but I still like his tape.
He's got some return value.
And I'm not sure that he's as slow as you think he is.
He's slow. For a small guy, I think he runs in the 4.5s.
I think Tank only ran to the 4.4s. But Tank plays much faster than that. I think it's the lesson.
This guy doesn't play the Tank Dell speed.
Okay, I'll give you that. All right, next up, Jerrion Jones, cornerback, Florida State. Almost 6 feet, 190, 4.38. Good Lord. I didn't love him as much as some people did. 90% slot. I thought he moved well laterally in space, needed to do better as a wrap-up tackler. He'll fight through wide receiver blocks to get to the tunnel screens. Quick game. Question is straight line deep speed is what I wrote down here. He ran a 4.38. Looks like a liability in deep routes. So maybe he doesn't play as fast as he timed, but maybe you feel differently. His 5 career interceptions. My comp for him in terms of his physical stature was Ronald Darby.
He's not as smooth as Ronald Darby.
Yeah, I clearly don't love him despite his.
No, but he's. This guy, I like his size. I think he's fast, straight line. When he has to change direction or flip his hips, that's when he loses his gear and speed. He's best when he's coming forward. He is tight in the hips, struggles to mirror in man coverage, really can't mirror any receiver when they're getting out of their breaks because of the tightness through his hips. And he's just late to the receivers. He has wasted steps in his transition that need to get cleaned up. When he gets extended where it looks slow is when he gets extended vertically or across the field because he has to change direction. If it was just a foot race, and then you would see his speed. I thought he was pretty aggressive coming in support, but he's just out of control because he can't break down because of the tightness in his hips.
Okay.
I thought he had some bursts off the edge on the blitz, too. I thought that's where you see his straight line speed when he comes. But any change of direction is when he looks slow.
Where are you taking him? I have him day three towards the closer to the end than to the beginning of day three.
Yeah, everybody will have him in different spots because of the speed. He had that pick six when I went back and was watching tape this weekend. Apparently, you didn't do your homework. I did, that Debo sent over the weekend. So I spent all day yesterday watching all these guys. He had a pick six in the Southern Miss game, but other than that, didn't see much ball production.
I watched him on February 18th ahead of the combine. I don't like to wait till the last minute to do my homework.
Okay, good job for you. Debo, give me like a star.
Yeah, give me a gold star, not a silver star. Next up, Cam Hart. You were a big fan of him. You talked about him a lot when we did the Senior Bowl podcast and the HQ hits. I mean, this is how you build him in the factory. 6'3", 202 pounds, 39.5-inch vertical, ran a 4.5, which is plenty fast. I thought he was a little stiffer than seemingly everyone else. And what I have to be careful of is that I didn't love Cam Taylor-Britt coming out. Cam Taylor-Britt is a really good player, and I saw some similarities in terms of the stiffness coming out of school for him. And maybe that's – I'm overcompensating for Cam. Maybe I'm missing something, and maybe he ends up being more like that than more like Alani Johnson, for example, who was a longer cornerback coming out of Kentucky who never was able to put it together.
Yeah, I like this guy at the Senior Bowl. I thought that he can drop his weight for as tall a guy as he is and getting into and out of his transition. I thought he had some bursts. He makes some plays on balls in the air. I think the one thing that really bothered me was I think he needs to be more physical in the run, especially getting off blocks. But he's willing as a tackler. I think the durability and the shoulders, I think he had shoulder surgery on both shoulders through his career, which may be the lack of physicalness at times. But I thought this guy is a late Friday, early Saturday pick because of the size and because of his ability to drop his weight and to transition smoothly, has a chance.
Yeah, and I think most teams agree with you. Late Friday, maybe early Saturday. I have him a little more in the middle of Saturday, but we'll find out. Next up, this guy I like a lot. And I want to hear your thoughts on Dwight McLaughlin, the cornerback out of Arkansas. What are you grunting about? 6'1.5", 185, 447, 32-inch vertical. LSU transfer. Looked like he was fluid on tape. I thought he played like he understood like the coverages in front of him. The LSU game in particular, can sink his hips, stay in phase. Doesn't fall for double or stutter moves. He's smooth getting out of breaks. Can tackle at the catch point. Plastered neighbors on an end zone fade in the last play of game. Never looked panic on the deep throws. What do you think about Dwight?
Really liked his length. I thought he had natural hands, and I thought he showed good ball production and instincts. He had two interceptions in the games I watched, jumped option routes versus LSU and versus Auburn. I think he's better in zone than man press, where he can play routes in front of him because I think he anticipates throws and does a nice job there. I do question his speed if he has to get out, turn his hips, and run. I saw him get beat deep in the BYU game. I think this guy is willing enough in run support. Like to see him a little grittier at times. I think this guy is like a cover two type corner that's best playing the routes in front of him. And I do think he has some natural instincts to get jump on throws and anticipate where the quarterback is going with the ball.
Eight career picks, missed only one tackle all in the 2023 season. I have him. I like him late day two.
I'm going to bet you $1. I'm taking Cam Hart will go before him.
Yeah. That's going to be a sentimental bet for me. I'll take that bet. I think I like him more than I had heard no one talking about him until I watched him before the combine because I saw his name on the list. Have you heard anyone talking about him before you watched him this weekend?
I can't divulge that information.
All right. Put that down, Debo. I'll make the sentimental Dwight McLaughlin bet. All right. Finally, Sione Vaki out of Utah. Safety, 5'11", 210, 4'6", 2", with a 39.5-inch vertical. Half the snaps he played deep. A quarter of the snaps he played in the box, and then he actually played some slot. And he also took some reps at running back, I believe, at the Senior Bowl. So he feels like a Hufanga-type player in that you throw him out there and he's just going to find the ball and destroy things, but the athleticism is what's going to be limiting. That said, does the Hufanga-ness in his game get him drafted higher than just seeing the measurables on a sheet of paper? I think it does.
No.
Okay. Well, tell me what you think, and I'll tell you where I'm taking him.
I think this guy is a better football player than athlete.
Yep.
Best when he's close to the line of scrimmage. This guy is really aggressive and run support. Love the way he comes humming off the edge. I think he's very instinctive to get off blocks and find the ball. Better going straight forward than he is turning his hips. He'll fight his ass through screen blocks out there. And where he struggles is in coverage. Space is not his friend, especially down the field. I think he lacks range. Doesn't anticipate throws as well as he should. The lack of athleticism shows and speed shows up when he has to go from deep half of the field to get outside the numbers. I think once he's out of position, he's not athletic enough to get back into position in space. I think this guy is going to be a demon on special teams. I think this guy is going to carve out a role, and I think people are going to fall in love with the football player. They can't forget about the athletic limitations in space, but use him as some kind of dime linebacker or somewhere where he has some kind of situational. Reminded me a little bit of Josh Metellus, who we drafted in the 7th round.
Yep.
Of the way Brian Flores uses him now as a dime and a robber and things like that. To me, this guy is too good a football player to not make a football team. I don't see him Friday, but I think Saturday someone's going to get a heck of a football player.
Yep. I had him as a middle to late 4th rounder.
Yep.
Yeah. You okay with that?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Okay. And I just looked up Talanoa Hufanga's measurables. He was 6 feet, 199. So he actually weighs 10 pounds less than Sione Ibaka. He ran a 4.64, which is very similar. And let's see, what was his vertical? 35 and a half versus 39 and a half. So those sort of check off. And he was a 5th round pick, but he is also incredibly important to what San Francisco did. Again, fit matters. The way you use the player matters. But I think of all these players, Rick, let's go through them quickly here again. Jalen Ford, the linebacker out of Texas. Taj Washington, the wide receiver. Jerrion Jones, the cornerback. Sione Ibaka, we just talked about, the safety slash do-it-all player. Dwight McLaughlin, the cornerback out of Arkansas. And Cam Hart out of Notre Dame. Who gets drafted first?
Cam Hart.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. I don't even know if I don't want to make a dollar bet on that. I've already lost $2 or $3 today. Think I'm gonna take my ball and go home. All right. That's it. We are done. What episode is this? 138. So by the time we're done with Pro Day week, we'll be up to 140. Down the home stretch. There'll be fewer than 30 days into the draft. Crazy. All right. The next time you see me and Rick, we'll be in Baton Rouge. Post Jaden Daniels slash Malik Nabers slash Brian Thomas Jr. slash Mason Smith.
Yeah, Mason, my friend.
Mason Smith, Mekhi Beck, Mekhi Wingo. There'll be a ton of guys we'll be talking about there. Yeah. So we'll see you guys.
Ryan.
Yeah.
I'll tell people about the mini episodes hitting the feed.
Oh, yeah. In case you, because sometimes people get angry, Debo, that things show up in their feed that they weren't expecting. So we've been doing the ultimate mock drafts for each individual team. We'll do all 32 teams we've done. I think 4 are live now, so you can check those out. They're only 10 minutes. So if it's not your thing, just don't listen to them, but don't get angry. We're just trying to hit all the bases. People seem to be responding to those well, and Rick will be doing some of those with us in the near future as well. He just have to sort out his contract details because there's only so many things he's willing to do for with the first pick. But yeah, so those will be in your feed if they are not already. You can watch them on YouTube as well. But for Rick, for Debo, I'm Ryan Wilson. Thank you guys who watch, who listen, who comment, and we'll see you next at LSU.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.